Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast, and your hosts are a couple of guys who are embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
How you doing, Adam?
I just received a text from my wife, and I've got sort of a crazy story to tell. Do you have time for a crazy story?
I love a crazy story.
So I was in L.A. last week. My wife and I were in L.A. last week. She being there for work, me being there for food. And I love going to LA. I think this is a feeling I've expressed to you many times. I love eating and drinking there. I think it's super fun. I probably love it because I don't live there.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and I, whenever we go, have a great time. Stay for like 3 or 4 days and then we're out. She's mostly there for work, so we like do fun nighttime things there.
We've done a couple's vacation there, my wife and your wife and you and me, and we had a splendid time.
Just gobbling up all that Korean barbecue. Really great.
Yeah.
This trip began like so many others. Great trip. Great eating and drinking. Great hotel. Love it. But on the last day we were there, my wife and I ended up going separate ways. I ended up taking a meeting with good friend of ours, friend of the pod, Adam Lizagor, over at Sandwich Video. And I was over there having coffee with him while my wife was enjoying an Impossible Burger. The meatless burger that is made of like vegetable protein, but still bleeds.
I thought only women bleed.
Your burger, yeah. It's a real cranky burger. So my wife and I,
that's what that song's about, Adam.
Are enjoying a great last day in LA, albeit separately. And I get a text while I'm hanging with Lizagor that says, "Oh my god, rental car was broken into. Everything was stolen."
What?
And I was like, "Oh no." Like totally destroyed by the idea that my wife was there for work, and what was stolen was her work shit. Like, she had a bag in the car with workplace laptop, workplace paperwork, workplace things.
Man, yeah.
Along like with, her personal effects, her iPad and stuff like that. Like,
the process of reporting that stuff to your job has got to just be such a miserable situation.
Yeah, and so, she's in the fashion district, blocks away from Skid Row, having to write a police report for things that she knows will never be recovered. This is a police-officer interaction wherein the officer side of things are not going to be working in shifts to recover the Credence tapes. The stuff is as good as gone, and she knows it, and it's just awful.
Let me ask you this, Adam. Did she find social studies homework wedged into the seat cushions?
There was no social studies homework to be found.
Oh.
So, I mean, it's a total wipeout. I had my bag on me. Otherwise, my shit would have been in the car just as easily. So we get to the airport, and I meet my wife there, and she is as sad as one can appropriately be about being the victim of thievery. And not only was her work stuff stolen, but a coworker's work stuff was stolen too.
Oy.
Because she was traveling with work people. And it was her idea to go get this Impossible Burger. And so she's feeling bad on a couple of levels. Like, her feeling of responsibility that put them in that circumstance. Her feeling of like, well, yeah, I shouldn't have left shit in the car. That's not great. That's not a great look. And also, like, the A story of the thievery, which is valuable stuff that got stolen that she's now going to have to deal with replacing. So that was a week ago. Today, she texts me and says, the stuff has been recovered. I need to go back down to LA to get it.
What?
Yeah. The most unlikely conclusion to this story is the stuff was found. And the stuff was found, Ben.
That's so wild.
I would have bet any amount that none of the stuff would be seen again.
I had a camera stolen in LA a few years ago, like one of the professional video cameras that I own for work. And it was like, it felt like, I felt like Lebowski asking the officers if there was any, you know, chance of recovering the car.
Yeah.
Like, they, you know, they basically told me that if they do recover it, a bum will have used it as a toilet.
It seems impossible to think that in a city the size of Los Angeles, there is any hope for your effects to be recovered.
Yeah.
Perhaps the same chances of creating a meatless hamburger that tastes, smells, and eats like a standard issue beef burger.
We live in a time of miracles, Adam.
I know.
Fucking so, magnets. How do they work?
So we left LA like feeling like, ah, we finally got our bad LA moment. Like we've been coming to LA for, we've been to LA dozens of times and we've loved it every time. And now we're leaving like, we finally fucking got dinged. Like there's real LA for you. And now like redemption. We can love LA again, Ben. Speaking of special missions, wherein you must chase down a special item, today we have a very special episode, Ben. It is Season 6, Episode 20, The Shays.
The entrepreneur is checking out a stellar nursery. And Captain Picard gets called to the observation lounge by Riker. He goes in there and the lights are all off, but his attention is immediately grabbed by a piece of garden pottery that's sitting on the big curved table there.
The Travelocity commercial gnome.
The lights come up and there's an old man there with Riker.
Coming up next. The old man taking a bath.
This is Professor Galen, who was the, like, superstar academic archaeologist that Picard got bitten by the archaeology bug under. And this guy's talking about Picard like he was the star pupil, like Commander Darren in the last episode. Like, if captaining doesn't work out for Picard, he's got a career in archaeology.
You call this archaeology?
I feel like Star Trek is a world that's not unlike our contemporary world, where every kid is named Galen and Dalen and Quaylen and...
Come on, there's some Aidens.
Yeah, it feels like names on this show are beginning to form a pattern.
Mm. This guy's old enough that it's possible that he was born in the early aughts. I mean, maybe this show inspired a lot of that. A lot of people watched this show.
Yeah.
Maybe they don't even realize what they're doing.
Oh, I think they know what they're doing, Ben.
So, Pistu is geeking the fuck out about this pottery. It's a relic from the third dynasty of something something.
From the workshop of the Master of Tarquin Hill.
It's made by a master. It's all intact. All the little parts are there.
There's something about acting excited and knowledgeable that seems as difficult to me as acting drunk for an actor. Like, I think you could so easily be a real goof about this. I think Patrick Stewart threads that needle pretty nicely. Like, he's blown away by the subject. He's super knowledgeable about it. He's pumped to receive it.
Yeah. And what's really, I mean, like, what makes Patrick Stewart just, you know, the star that he is that he's able to act both like an excited expert and like he's drunk in the same scene. So it's like, let me tell you something, Will Riker. This is pottery from the workshop of the master of Tarquin Hill. And Becky doesn't want you coming over here anymore.
Your impression of drunk Picard sounds like Louis C.K. Louis C.K.'s impression of a woman. It's pretty spot on.
But the professor is not here to offer Picard his equivalent of chocolate cake. This is bribery taking place.
Yeah, and there is a quality about their relationship that is almost Boothby-esque. Like, like Picard reveres this professor in a way that I think was familiar to me, at least. Like, I think a lot of people who are fortunate enough to... A lot of very fortunate people will have the good professor or the good teacher, like the teacher that really got to them in an amazing way. And for Picard, it is this professor who has had such an effect on him that in spite of Picard's rank and career success and success on any level, he is willing to be called Mr. Picard by him. He is willing to be less than this person.
I should say Captain.
Please, Mister will do fine.
He puts this dude higher on the pyramid than he is, which is super, super unusual for a non-admiral character.
You know what happens when you put people on pedestals, man? Sometimes you put them up so high you can't even get to them. Anyway, I'm going to go down to the beach.
Is this Riker hitting on Guinan? Is that what you're doing? What's going on here?
That was a little hipster Picard. That was hippie Picard again.
Hippie Picard again. Oh.
You know, that deep character from like three seasons ago that I did.
You did that one time.
Yeah.
Well, Galen is here not just to give him this thing, but to say, like, hey man, like, you walked away from what could have been an illustrious career in archaeology, like, you could have been like the star archaeologist of your generation, and you're not. And I'm here to offer that back to you. And the way I'm offering that is like take a leave of absence from the Enterprise, come on this expedition with me. You know, we might be away for 3 months, we might be away for a year, but it's going to be worth it. Trust me. Like, this is, like, the thing that I am onto is a big enough find that you're not going to regret it.
This is another way that they establish the reverence that Picard has for him, because Galen does not betray any of his knowledge at all to him, based only on his word that the discovery is significant. That's the only thing that Picard has to go on in making this decision.
It's
sort of a lottery ticket at this point.
I wondered why. I mean, like, I understand narratively why Galen won't give up the goods on what the mission is, but I don't understand why this character would keep it under his hat. Like, does he not trust Picard? Like if the implications of what he's looking into are real, and, like, spoiler alert, we find out they are, it's like a way bigger deal than any trade mission that the Enterprise might have to go to.
You are totally correct, and this is the moment where the entire episode crashes. Like, the House of Cards totally falls apart here, because like, what Galen intends to do is basically a suicide mission. He wants to take a Previa out to do his archaeology, knowing that there are competing factions trying to find the same stuff. Why doesn't he just tell Picard what the deal is and use the resources of the Enterprise? It's a totally stupid line of thinking for what is supposed to be a really smart man.
It's a strange...
The secret dies with him, too, if he fails.
Right. And the secret does die with him. They spend the first third of this episode having Galen, really ply Captain Picard, guilt trip him, make him think about the career he could have had, and Picard ultimately is like, Doug, I cannot walk away from the Enterprise. If I leave the Enterprise, I leave it for good, and you haven't given me enough to go on to make that a decision I am willing to make. And so Galen is disappointed, but he gets in his Previa and goes on his way.
When I'm soaring through the neighborhood on important missions in our Previa, the essential controls are all at my fingertips, so I can perform commands with ease and still keep on course.
And then, the second he has left the ship, he's getting attacked by this alien attack ship.
A distress call from Professor Galen's shuttle.
They, drop out of warp. Worf tags him with a little phaser fire.
Worf!
I didn't hit it that hard. Must have had a self-destruct.
The ship blows up, and they beam Galen aboard, and he has spilled a ton of Prego all over the front of his shirt.
The moment that Worf fires on the ship and it explodes and Riker wheels around and is like, Worf, what the fuck? this is not the first time that Worf has accidentally destroyed a ship.
They don't ever get into why the ship accidentally explode, right?
No, they don't.
Because the one that happened before was that sick ass murdered out,
yeah,
space Cadillac that was full of explosives, essentially. It blew up because it had so much volatile cargo on it that when a phaser penetrated its shields, it went up like a powder keg. But this ship blows up and there's never an explanation offered for why it would have been so vulnerable.
I think we're starting to see a picture of how exceptionally the crew treats Worf and also Data, being the only crew people of their kind and type on the ship, they can get away with so much unpunished. Worf's going off on Rambo missions. Data's stealing the ship whenever he wants. They're never punished for these things.
Yeah.
They play by a different set of rules. Rules that I hope we will one day read about in the Bible.
I don't know that poor writing is canonical Star Trek so much as accidental Star Trek. Galen has a deathbed confession to Picard that he was a bit of a dick before he left.
Sorry for being such a dick. Beep!
That was super weak, man.
And they sort of give each other the rock, and then he's dead.
Yeah. And then the blanket that he was lying under slowly collapses as he fades out of existence.
When 900 years old you reach, look as good you are not.
Picard decides that they're going to not go do their mission. Because they have a McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
And Geordi and Data have downloaded the computer from the Previa that was attacked by the alien ship. And they're like, yeah, we got a lot of pieces here. And there's all these crazy numbers. We don't really know what they mean. But it's clear that Galen was trying to protect this information. And the aliens that attacked him are not really aggressive, but they are known as information dealers, so they wanted something he had, and that's enough for Picard to say, let's figure out, where he's been and where he's coming from. We'll start looking at clues, and everybody's like, well, yeah, but what about trade conference? And Picard is like, Conference? Are you fucking kidding? That's the most dangerous shit in the world. I'd much rather do some archaeology for the rest of this episode.
It's suicide.
So they go to this planet that, I guess it's like the last planet that Galen had been at. And it's just kind of like a regular, like, proto-Earth type of planet. And Picard's like, well, is there any archaeology to be done here? Are there any, like, ruins or anything like that? Scanners don't turn up anything. So
nothing but urethral snakes.
God damn it. Why don't you go do your hentai podcast by yourself, Adam?
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, the foremost tentacle porn podcast.
By one host who's embarrassed and another host who's not here anymore.
So they don't find anything here, and Picard is like, well, he went to another planet. Why don't we go there? And Riker, at this point, has been sort of humoring Picard's whole deal about this. And he's like, look, like, this was a dead end. What's to say that the rest of these planets that Galen went to was a dead end? And Picard sort of reprioritizes the whole thing in the manner you suggest. He's like, you know, if this puzzle is as important as Galen says, then I think we gotta put this to the top of the list. And this scene was really notable to me, Ben, because of its composition. There's Picard and Riker arguing about this in the foreground, but in the crook of Riker's arm is Troy's face, and then the deep background is Worf. And Riker changes positions a couple of times in this scene, and Troy always remains visible inside his arm.
Hmm.
Even at the very end, when Troy regards Worf about the conflict that they're seeing between Riker and Picard, I just thought that was really deft. And it's a Jonathan Frakes directed episode, which...
Man, I felt Frakes on this in the cold open. I was like, this feels so Frakes-y already. And then it's so fun to like see that confirmed.
Yeah, and like... I think with every episode he directs, we keep saying this over and over, I think he is the series' strongest director. He is really good at this point in the show, really confident. I think he's taken the throne from Rob Bowman.
Yeah. Where did Rob Bowman go? He must be off on some other series.
Yeah, he stopped working this show, I think, in one of the first two seasons, and he went off to do X-Files and stuff. He went on to have a career, but stopped doing this show.
R.I.P. Rob Bowman. Or as my wife would say, RSVP Rob Bowman.
Oh, no.
Have I ever told you about my wife's like amazing ability to put two idioms together into a way that doesn't make sense, but you know what she means?
Tell me more.
You'll have to call again. I'm just leaving.
I should write a few of them down. Like, I'll plant this now, and in like a couple of months, I'll have enough to make a cold open. I'll have enough to make a Marin open out of it.
You're proposing a chapter in the Wikia.
Yeah, my wife is quietly hilarious.
That's the best kind.
Yeah. I mean, she's not like me where I'm like, hey, look at me. I need your attention here now. I'm making jokes. La, 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 la. She just lays back in the cut and says something super funny every so often.
My love is a fever, long in jail for that, which longer nurseth the disease. Tell me more. You'll have to go again.
Troy comes into the ready room and is like, hey, is this just Ray Wenge? Is this just Omerta?
What does it mean?
And Picard is like, no, this is not about that, man. This is about, like, maybe this is the biggest discovery ever. And also, they killed my professor.
This is two straight episodes where Counselor Troy's services are needed and used in a great way. It's like the show just remembered what her utility was and they've just sort of woken up to the idea.
Yeah, like, give Troy a scene where she confronts the captain or interacts with her nominal function on the ship at all. And she'll add to the story.
Yeah, yeah. She totally does here, and Picard just starts screaming and waving a phaser cannon around, and then he smashes it into the ships behind him. Like rambling on about the line and where it must be drawn. He really kind of breaks here.
Fucking dog has fucking papers. Over the line!
You broke your little ships.
She sort of yes captains him, right? Like, her counsel is not exactly welcomed. She's sort of rebuffed and turned away.
Right, like, I mean, he kind of makes the trade conference or the peace conference or whatever sound like the kind of fish versus dog level diplomacy that the entrepreneur sometimes gets into. He's like, obviously, like, that's important or whatever, but this is way more important, and I'm not going to let a couple of, like, joke aliens make this man's life work disappear through our fingers.
The Emerald Room at the Howard Johnsons can wait.
Yeah. We'll be there in a week anyways, because I'm going to learn how to flip real estate.
Yeah.
They pull up to this next planet, and it's like a beautiful looking planet, but there's this brown poopy creeping through the edges of the atmosphere, and it becomes clear pretty quickly that all life everywhere is being destroyed.
It wasn't me. It was the one-armed man.
I can't lose my arm because I'm a creature of surpassing power. I'm a Daud. You can't cut things off of me. I am eternal.
Where were we? I totally blacked out.
Did Kevin steal your memory?
Yeah. Yeah, so evidently, not only are they on the path of, like, a what's possibly, like, a super weapon or a super technology, there's also someone rolling around the galaxy with a planet-killing weapon.
Yeah, and so they're like, what would you be covering up by destroying all life on a planet? Maybe the DNA. And so that, like, puts them onto the idea that the numbers that they found in Galen's Previa computer might be a genetic code. And they look into this and they're like, yeah, there's different genes from 19 different planets around this quadrant. Like, there's something to this. Like, we're kind of like onto the scent.
It looks like these samples are from your blood.
Millions of years ago, mosquitoes landed on different kinds of animals. Then sap from trees froze them in time. And Galen came along in a Previa, dug them up, and extracted the code.
You think Galen was trying to create Jurassic Park?
He spared no expense.
Yeah. His preference for the Previa and instead of Jeep Wrangler or the little... the little ride along.
Yeah, Jeep Wrangler is not a great space vehicle.
Yeah.
The way it really is. You don't want a leather exterior on your space vehicle.
Yeah, that's soft top. Not great for deflection.
Yeah.
I mean, or atmosphere.
It obviously looks great when you're going to the beach and you want to peel off your top and show off your six pack, but
yeah.
That's not really Galen's bag, is it?
I just really wanted to hear Mr. DNA again.
Yeah.
That's a deep cut.
It's a deep cut. You know, like, I wish we had more to draw from with Mr. DNA. We've mined the shit out of Kevin. We've mined the shit out of Batman, even.
The thing is, we have yet to sexualize Mr. DNA in the way that we have every other impression we've ever done on this show. You know we've reached the bottom once we sexualize Mr. DNA.
I'm in your butt.
And scene.
Oh, perfectly placed act break.
I am the cutest of all. You will assist us. I am the cutest of all. You are all.
The next planet they get to got a couple of Cardassian warships there. And they've got the kind of like sassy Cardassian captain going like, oh yeah, you should clear out because like I was like doing some counting. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of it, but it seems like we have twice as many ships as you, so fuck off.
Yeah. She's attitudinal in the way that we have come to expect Cardassians, you know?
Mm-hmm. But it was nice to see a lady get a gull position. I don't think we've really seen any lady Cardassians until now.
We saw the daughter with the pet inside the torture chamber.
Right.
Where Picard was taken. I think that was the only lady Cardassian that we've seen so far. They still have not figured out what a Cardassian bridge looks like, though. It looks like they put up a green psych planning to comp it out and then just didn't.
Yeah. It's like a black leather executive office chair and a green psych.
Yeah.
it's really limited.
Almost like because it's that green, they could have done it for the remaster, right? They could have done something.
This would have been keyable for sure.
Yeah.
It's also like they had a Cardassian bridge in Deep Space Nine, right?
Yeah.
Because they've got that that one bad guy that's always showing up. Gul Dukat.
Yeah, the point is, like, the world exists. That background exists. I read something interesting in the show notes about this one. I will occasionally do research. I'll cop to that.
People always get really freaked out when you admit this.
What I really enjoy reading are, like, the quotes from people like Frakes, whose quotes were in the show notes for this one. And he was like, he mentioned something like all of the money for the show was going across the street, as in Deep Space Nine. Like, I guess they definitely felt the budget tightening on Next Gen as they were spooling up Deep Space. And that just seems insane to me that the legacy show would be siphoned off to start this new one that's not been established.
Right. I mean,
by season six, I think it's fairly well known that Next Generation is a great Star Trek show and is deserving of resources, is it not?
All I can think of is that from a sets and scope standpoint, Deep Space Nine is a lot more ambitious than TNG. And these last two seasons are where you would have seen TNG really start to like stretch itself out and be like, okay, we're not going to do Ace Garden Center and Psych for Jungle Planet. We're going to like go shoot in a real jungle somewhere because like we have $10 million to spend every episode and let's fucking make this look good. Let's do this for real.
I'm interested in scrutinizing those first two seasons of Deep Space Nine for this reason, like to see where the money went and to like feel some bad feelings about it, knowing that those should be Next Gen dollars, you know?
I'm going to place a wager right now that a good percentage of that budget went right up Berman's nose.
Ooh, that's a hot take. Hot take coming through, Ben. Get some potholders for that one. And a trivet. You got some tater tots in that hot take? Good old Midwestern hot take.
Yeah. Hopefully the tickets to our live show, which we are on the brink of announcing as of this recording, are selling like hot takes.
Hopefully when we get to Minnesota, there will be a number of hot takes to sample.
So they get to this, they're like talking to these Cardassians and they're like about to get scared off when some Klingons decloak and Picard does what diplomat Picard is want to do, which is he gets them all in the conference room and is like, let's work together. I know that you, the Klingons, think that this is a hyper weapon. I know that you, the the Cardassians, who are like a crazy militarized society, but somehow also have like major resource deficiency problems, are convinced it's an unlimited power source. We don't know what it is ourselves, but like it seems like we all have like a grab bag full of jigsaw puzzle pieces, and we can get a lot closer to completing the picture if we work together than if we work at cross purposes. So like, we'll do it in a way where you can all be in the room while we put them together, and we'll be just as far along as each other as we advance this mystery.
Almost this entire scene is shown in shot reverse shot without any of the characters being together in frame.
Yeah, they don't.
That sort of underscored how separate everyone was in their thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like once again, they've got the Cardassian lit in a super skull face, where, you know, like the Klingon is very like, you know, braggadocio and bombastic, but he's like more a friend than the Cardassian, and so he's lit more evenly. And this Cardassian, like, she looked terrifying when they cut to her.
The Klingon character Nudak had that fun combination of threatening and bumbling that made me think that he was like Klingon Luis Guzman. Like, like every character Luis Guzman plays seems to have that type of combination that I really enjoy.
Yeah, he walks over to the window of the observation lounge and looks out at the planet below and says, "You could see the sea from here if you could see it."
You gotta put me in a film, Jack. I'm ready.
A couple years ago, I was working for a media company, and we had an opportunity to interview Luis Guzman. And
the
reporter and I like put together a list of Luis Guzman quotes to like test him, and he basically got every single one of them. Like, he was unstumpable. Like, he knows all his best lines.
Wow. Was he great? I want to believe that he's a great hang.
He was a fucking awesome hang.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's great.
It was totally good. They put their little genetic puzzle pieces together, and it's like four corners. It's looking like a shape, but they're obviously missing a shape. Like, they're not missing so much that a child couldn't connect the dots of what's missing, but they're definitely missing something. And so I think that, like, it's like enough that they can kind of like get the computer working on some like processes to kind of like solve for missing piece. And that gives them some time to kill Adam. And so with this time to kill, the Klingon does what Klingon's gonna do, which is go down to the bar, and he finds Data there. And there's a great scene where this guy is like challenging Data to a Klingon strength test.
"Commander, your reputation for physical strength is known even in the Klingon Empire."
It's so great. It's like he's challenged a semi-truck to a strength test.
"You are familiar with the Bahat Kul challenge?"
It's hilarious how he just sort of bounces off of Data.
"More talk."
It's such a fun scene, and it's like, it's one of those ones where it's like, man, this makes me once again angry at every time there's been like an intruder on board and Data hasn't like grabbed their guns and beat them to death with them, or
yeah,
whatever, like used his super speed and his super strength to overcome an adversary.
Or like for Bashir to be so interested in his breathing and his beard growing, like, show me some feats of strength, Data.
Yeah. You know, go pick up that warp core.
Yeah.
It's fun. Like, he like headbutts him and it flies across the room because Data's head is made out of titanium or whatever.
Because it's made of metal.
"And robots are strong."
The other scene we get in this like killing time is Geordi like wandering around the engineering section, and he just kind of like is walking past a computer and does a double take and is like, what the hell? And then radios up to the captain and says,
you might want to come down here. I found something that I think you should see.
And that is pregnantly left unaddressed at this point.
So pregnant.
Hella pregnant.
Many times throughout this episode, I kept thinking about how insane Galen's plan was. There is no way he gets even a tenth of the way to this point. Like, if his Previa got into a Mexican standoff between the Cardassians and the Klingons in orbit of this planet, like, he's so fucked. Can you imagine Captain Picard dying on that stupid mission in a Previa? Like, he's really lucky he didn't take him up on that deal.
Well, the other side of that, though, is like, how is everybody onto this, you know?
Yeah.
Everybody is working from Galen's notes. So, like, at some point, his Dropbox account got hacked or something. Cause
that's the thing that goes unsaid, is because everything's so synchronized with everyone else's spycraft, there had to be a breach, and it had to come from Galen. And, like, why didn't the story start there? It felt to me that, like, even a single line of Galen telling Picard, like, the urgency of his mission is as it is because he suffered a security breach, and the discovery is so important that he has to rush out there to chase the rest of this puzzle down. Like, that gives the story a little bit more heft, and it's not a ton of work to do.
Right, so you start it that way, and then instead of challenging Data to feats of strength, the Klingon comes into 10 forward and challenges Galen. It kills Galen, and then he's out of the story the same way that he is in this version.
Easy. We hit all the same beats.
So they get everybody back together, and they're going to like wait for the ticker tape to get shit out of the computer to say what the next planet is. And the computer announces the name of the planet they're going to go to, and suddenly Gul Aset, the Cardassian captain, beams out. The Cardassian ships start bullseyeing the entrepreneur, and it's looking pretty bad, right?
It's some real fun Cannonball Run vibes, right? Like the race, the race to the goal, the spaceship race to the goal, especially. Mm-hmm. Really fun.
I really hope that they get to the end and they come out on stage and Smash Mouth is there.
They have a long way to go and a short time to get there.
We cut up to the bridge, and Riker is like, all right, guys, let's cut the inertial dampeners and make this look good. And it becomes clear that somehow they have like hardened themselves to Cardassian beam weapons in a way that makes, like, I don't really understand how this works either. Like, how can knowing that the Cardassians are going to shoot at them make them invulnerable to the Cardassians' weapons?
I have no idea. All I know is that this plan appeals to Riker's sense of roleplay.
Yeah, they didn't get word to the Klingons, or no, the Klingons like knew that this was happening also, but the Klingon crew wasn't as good at making the Klingon cruiser invulnerable. So
And Klingon Luis Guzman just goes off on this poor guy. Over the phone, too.
You incompetent Topa! You were supposed to be prepared!
Yeah, that's not a good look, man.
No. He's a little bit wee, isn't he? He may be the littlest Klingon.
little shorty?
Yeah. I mean, Dorne just towers over him.
It's one thing that I think I wish this show had done more of is play with the size of different aliens. Like,
yeah.
I think that, you know, like, it's not that hard to do, you know? Like, they do a lot of that in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, like, playing with the scale of different kind of species. And,
mm-hmm.
What if the Klingons were just, like, a fucking, like, 8-foot-tall race? Like, they were all mad big. And, like, instead of Worf having trouble with doors, he just has to duck every time he goes through one.
Yeah.
Like, that's shootable. You just have to make a plan for it.
A man, a plan, a camera. Giant Klingons.
It's one of my favorite palindromes, Adam. Picard and Captain Guzman come up on the bridge, and Picard's like, well, we better get to that secret other planet. The Cardassians aren't going to leave their pants pulled down for long. And they head off, and who is it? Like, it's like the captain, Guzman, the doctor, and Worf beam down to a styrofoam planet. And they're looking at, like, some fossils that might have the last piece of DNA. And, like, what they've gotten to at this point is that hidden in DNA on planets all over the quadrant are numbers that can be put together to make a computer program. And like, there's it's the subject of some debate what this computer program does, but this is the planet where the last piece of the puzzle is. And they're finally going to have their picture of kittens in a Romulan wicker basket. So they get up there, and they're like poking around for this lichen when the Cardassians beam down, and it's like, fuck! They are so quick!
And then a moment later, Romulans beam down. And they're like, we were watching you guys the whole time. We were cloaked. Yeah. And Klingon Luis Guzman has got to feel like a total idiot at this point. Like, he could have been cloaked the whole time, too.
Yeah, we have cloaking devices. Why weren't we this smart? We were playing checkers.
You rarely get, like, the gang together with all the aliens.
Yeah.
And this is it.
They got a real good group of actors for the Romulans, especially together, because they all look like they're straight out of, like, 1959. They have some real fucking past people faces.
Yeah. Good call.
And so everybody's, like, Mexican standoffing here.
Whee! What a predicament.
There's ray guns out. Everybody is, you know, recriminating everybody else. And
empty
Picard,
kitten baskets.
Yeah. And Picard and Beverly just kind of, like, quietly step back and scrape some lichen off the wall and scan it into a tricorder. And the tricorder turns into one of those little, like, mobile projectors that seems like it's going to be a great idea. But then it's like, eh, I spent, like, $200 on this, and there's really not that many things you can use it for.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
The projection ends up being sort of a gooey guy, or gooey girl, I guess. There's some androgyny at play here a little bit. Sort of a big head with recessed ears. A little bit of an Odo look to this person.
Yeah, and she's like in this kind of angelic white costume. She's in like a tupa.
You look good in that tupa. Some people don't, but you do.
Everyone like holds their breath. They're like, holy shit, this is it. This something amazing is going to happen.
Yeah.
And she basically is like, we're from a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. We thought it would be fun to sprinkle our information around, see if anyone put the pieces together so I could deliver to you this message. We're all the same, you and me. Why don't we just try to be more chill to each other or whatever?
Yeah, and it's kind of like, it's kind of shaming, right? Like she says, like, if you found this message, you are working together. And that's great to hear. Like our children have grown up and aren't being idiots trying to chop each other's heads off. And
meanwhile, and like that's Klingon Luis Guzman is making like the jerk off motion while she's talking. Not factually correct.
When it goes close on her, it's clear that she's got like basketball texture on her loaf.
Yeah, and her the areas around her lips are starting to come apart. It's not holding up under talking.
Yeah, and you can also tell that like the loaf is kind of just barely tucked into the top of her tupa. like you can see the edge of it under the collar of the shirt.
She delivers maybe the most quintessentially Star Trek message ever, right? It's some real shakari shit. Like there's some real mysticism at play here.
Yeah.
And I think everyone is a little disappointed to hear it.
It's like mysticism and the panspermia theory kind of combined, you know? It's such a good premise for a Star Trek episode, and it's a shame that this is the episode that they burned it in.
You know, during certain months out of the year, if you walk through New York, you can smell the panspermia tree in bloom. Not sure if you knew that, Ben.
I'm abundantly aware of that. Got to keep the door on my balcony closed for that very reason. She disappears, and the Klingon is like, "This is bullshit. Where's my weapon?"
Yeah, I think they all just sort of shrug their shoulders, go off on their separate ways. And the button on the episode is before everyone leaves, Picard's in his quarters, and the commander of one of the Romulan ships is like, "Hey, man, I've been giving that a lot of thought, and that weird white robe person on the planet's surface may have been onto something. Anyway, bye."
Yeah, it's a bit like, man, it's a shame we never got together, you and me. Oh well, too late now. We're both married.
I didn't think this scene worked though. Like it didn't walk close enough up to the line of being significant.
Yeah.
Like, is the fact that this person reached out to Picard at all of such significance that it's a big deal? I didn't think it was.
I mean, I guess the implication is that, like, maybe the Romulans are more like the Federation than anybody else. Like, they're kind of like the what if of the Federation being authoritarian.
Hmm.
And it's interesting to see one character kind of like consider the alternative. Like, Picard is never going to be like, man, I wish the Federation was more like the Romulan Empire, or like we could be more friendly with regimes that we find repugnant. But when that Romulan is like, I could see this like I could see us being pals in the future. It's at least an interesting idea, but again, like, I totally agree. It's an interesting idea that's in an episode that doesn't quite rise to the level of delivering on it.
If whatever they thought they were going to get out of this puzzle was significant enough, I was wondering how different this episode would have felt if a Rom Yarlin were involved, you know? Like, whatever happened to her? Why don't they give Denise Crosby a call every time something like this comes up? Like, we get returns from Q all the time, but we get so few callbacks by antagonists on this show.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame, Adam. Well, yeah. Did you like the episode?
Boy, I really liked the episode up until the last... Now I'll walk that back a little bit. I like the middle 25 of this episode quite a bit. I like the idea of Star Trek Cannonball Run, you know? That part was really cool. The Galen part didn't work for me, and all of his reasons for keeping it a secret didn't work. And the denouement at the end did not make me feel anything in a way that I prefer to feel at the conclusion of an episode, you know? Like, middle was real nice. There was a lot to do there. Like, I just want to click and drag that middle out to the edges.
Yes, like a content-aware scale function in Photoshop.
Right. Like, to my knowledge, they've never done an episode like that where it is just breathless all the way through. Like, if we get dropped into the middle of the chase.
Right.
It would have been great.
That would have been cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, likable, enjoyable episode with some problems, but that middle was enough for me to enjoy it and give it a pass.
Yeah, I feel the same way, man. I think it's... I kept thinking as I watched this, like, I would love to read the well-drawn science fiction novel about this idea.
Yeah.
Like, not even necessarily set in the Star Trek universe, but like it would be really cool to build the universe around this idea, because it is super interesting. Like, what if you found out that all of the destiny of your species and all of the species that you've become aware of in your starfaring, you know, empire or whatever, have been predetermined for billions of years? Like, what a crazy existential thunderclap to visit upon billions of people.
That idea is awesome. And that like, the idea of that gave me the chills when they were in Shimoda Corner talking about the possibility of that. Ben, to me, that should have been Star Trek Insurrection, right? Mm. Like, if you bolt that theory onto that movie, you can still keep that planet with the people who live forever. But if but if that's the end planet to this story, and that creates its own conflict among all of the rest of the people, like, that is a crazy good story, I think. If the puzzle leads to the Baku planet.
Yeah.
And then we pick it up from there.
How do you know that it's the Baku planet? I don't remember that kind of thing.
Isn't that who they are?
I totally believe you. I'm just saying, like, who cares enough about that movie to remember that?
Yeah, that was a real garbage movie. Hold on, I'm gonna fact check Baku planet. Gotta get that right, Ben. We're gonna get letters.
We get stacks and stacks of letters.
The Baku! Yeah. I was right. God, how did I know that? That movie had a $60 million budget and it made double.
Wow.
That comes as a surprise.
Double your money, double your fun.
At that point, they decide, we can make anything. This is a license to print money. I'm going to take a dump in this manila envelope. Give it a $60 million budget, script. And we'll make the next one. Ben, do we have any P1s?
Let's check in the manila envelope we have here. Do we have any P1s?
This manila envelope's squishy.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, we have a priority one message of a commercial nature here. It says this: Fish Boys, sixth official full length, is the fourth in a series of rock operas. The album Art Guards explores the lives of several artists and the interconnectedness of all things. RIYL, Art, Complex Television Shows, Rock. Previous works include An Elephant, about Topsy's haunting of Thomas Edison, Classic Creeps, a mystery, and Albatross, bank heists by a rock band on tour. Each will impress, thrill, and bloom with each listen. Hundreds of one-of-a-kind paintings of artists are available too. Touring soon! Beam on over to yofishboy.com to order the freshest masterpiece from Denton, Texas indie rock stars Fishboy. Art Guards hits May 19th on CD, LP, digital, and DLX. Do you know what DLX is?
I have no idea. The only other Denton, Texas band I know of is Centromatic. Denton, Texas puts out a lot of good music.
Yeah. I gave Fishboy a listen, and I enjoyed myself quite immensely.
I'm glad they're putting out records. Like,
yeah, that's cool.
Like, you can get their music on CD and LP. I love that.
You can tell that, you know, they're working at a certain level if LPs are part of their offerings.
Fishboy. Give it a listen.
YoFishboy.com. Go check it out.
Ben, our second Priority One message is of a personal nature. It is from your very own drunk Mr. Data, and it is for the sexy Duras sister. I think they're talking about Beator, right? That's the sexy one.
I've always been a Lursa man, Adam.
Oh, really? I don't know. I don't think I can get with that. I ride for Bator. Anyway, message goes like this. You are the only one that I want to go probing space buttholes with. Now that you're Miss Data, I can finally install my emotion chip. I've put my Horgon in the closet. I'm canceling my huge order from Uxbridge, and I've unsubscribed from Jordy's Red Pill podcast. I can't wait to explore strange new meatloaf with you while sipping Coco No-Nos. Love you.
Aw, that's sweet.
This is great. It says here in the notes that they're getting back from their wedding on the 10th. So any time after that would be a welcome message to receive. So they have just come back from what is obviously going to be a great wedding where they and their guests will have imbibed a lot of those Coco No-Nos.
That sounds like a fun party.
Yeah, congratulations, guys.
Congrats.
If you have a celebratory or personal or commercial message, any type of message, Ben, really, we'll take them all. You can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where personal messages are $100, commercial messages are $200. They're fun to read, fun to write, fun to pay for, and they contribute to the ongoing production of our show.
Darmok Angelad at Tanagra.
We do an embarrassing Star Trek podcast, and a big part of our success is owning that, being ourselves in all our embarrassing glory. But what if we didn't? What if we were just a Star Trek podcast? No embarrassment, no comedy, just Star Trek podcast. If you're somebody who wants a website, you could go generic and bland and one-size-fits-all on a social media platform, or you could buy a custom URL and design a custom website with Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform for all kinds of people to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place. All on your terms. So whoever you are, or whatever you're trying to do, own it with Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/scarves to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Personal grooming is less about something I do for myself, even though there are myriad reasons for that. And more about my consideration for other people who have to look at me, be around me, and on special occasions, love me physically. And when it's clear my front and backyards are becoming overgrown and unsightly, I'll break out the mower, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra from Manscaped. This Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra is really something else. This trimmer features two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Listen, spring cleaning doesn't just apply to your nether regions. Get the full grooming experience with Manscaped's signature Beard Hedger Pro Kit and Handyman Electric Face Shaver. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants, right?
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second, go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
Darmok, Kregage, and
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
I'm going to have to give it to Klingon Guzman for the feats of strength in the 10 Forward with Data. I just thought this actor really like chewed up this little moment. You know, it's like it's a great moment of levity in this episode. It's like a greater moment of levity than perhaps this episode deserves, and it's partly just because of how like how funny the performance is, like how fucking shocked he is at how quickly he loses. Like, this dude doesn't look like he works out exactly. He goes into his little like Klingon arm wrestle brimming with confidence, and he does not learn his lesson.
I like the idea that the legend of Data's strength has reached far into the Klingon people. Like, they know of him.
Yeah.
In a fun way.
They're fascinated by this.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it could be no one else than Nudak, really. Like, he's... And what an interesting magic trick you described of, like, an episode with such serious story beats... And his ham and cheese being completely welcome in it. Like, it does not spoil the broth at all.
No.
And I think that's a credit to how great he plays it. Like, yeah, he's not he's clownish without being a total fucking clown about it.
Right. I mean, and that's a hard Klingon needle to thread. Because at this point, the kind of, like, the comportment of a Klingon is pretty well established. Like, that's not something that you get to... mess around with much as an actor, in the same way that the kind of like the way that that your character is going to walk if you get cast as a Ferengi has been predetermined, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't get to go into Klingon loaf and then come in and do anything but like, I have, you know, strong feelings about this and honor and, you know,
right,
and all that shit. And within that really strong creative constraint, this guy manages to be like an interesting and fun character and a different Klingon guy than we normally get.
Yeah. Really cool. I loved his portrayal quite a bit. Ben, what do we have coming up on the next episode?
The next episode is season 6, episode 21, Frame of Mind, trapped in an alien mental hospital with little memory of the past. Riker is convinced he's going insane. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
I remember this being one of the great episodes.
Yeah.
That's how I remember it.
A tense psychological thriller.
We get totally unhinged hair from Riker, too, which is great. Like, another great moment of hinge hair symbiosis.
That is true. It's one of those ones where they, like, you know, like they try and fail to Twilight Zone every so often. And I remember this one succeeding in a really fun way. So I'm excited to watch it.
Yeah, me too. I think we're going to get a lot of yelling and screaming from Frakes here, which is one of my favorite sounds.
True dat. All right. Well, that'll be next time, Adam.
There is a next time to talk about our show, Ben. You know where that happens? On the internet. On Twitter, using the hashtag GreatestGen. There's also a group on Facebook and a couple of great pages on Reddit. One is the official Maximum Fun Reddit at r/MaximumFun. The other one is our very own branded Reddit page, r/GreatestGen.
Branded it is. We should thank Dark Materia for our music and Adam Ragusea for our other music and all the people that get our merch at maxfunstore.com and contribute to the production of the store at maximumfun.org/donate. And we're excited to see you all on our tour. And with that, we will be back at you next week with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. In an episode of The Greatest Generation that's shit in its pants, it's so crazy. Captain Jean-Luc Picard,
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.